Orale. Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm Jorge Martin, and today we're joined by a special guest. 7 years ago, she was a bright star as an intern for the Dodgers PR department. And after leaving the nest, she spent the last 4+ years turning herself into a rock star with Buccaneers.com and just with the Bucs organization in general. She's an awesome follow on the team's official website, again, Buccaneers.com, as well as Twitter and Instagram. We'll give you that in a second. And I tell you, guys, everybody, Familia, she breaks down plays as well as any coach out there. Oh, just get her on a chalkboard. She's the bomb. So happy to introduce to you my good friend, mi amiga, Carmen Vitale. Bienvenidos. Welcome, Carmen.
Gosh, thank you so much. That's just, it's more praise than I deserve, but I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, hey, you know what? We got to know each other on the baseball side. So, and it was great. I really saw great potential in you. One of the things that I loved about working with you is you didn't mind asking. You didn't mind, you know, throwing out ideas. Some young people were, you know, timid around the staff. You weren't. And I honestly think that's why you've been able to thrive. But I want to kind of take people back to that time. And you came to me with a pretty meaty story idea that obviously I was the publications director for the Dodgers. And, I thought it was great. As a father of daughters, I thought it was great. So it was about women gaining access to the clubhouse in the late 70s. But I want to give you the floor for this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was the PR intern, but writing had always been something that I had been way more interested in. And I remember watching an ESPN feature about women being granted access to the clubhouse, to, you know, even just the press box in general in baseball. And there was a recurring theme throughout that segment of the Dodgers being the ones to kind of progress that narrative, progress, you know, that movement. And they were just instrumental in making sure that women had a place in this industry. So I was working for the Dodgers at the time. And granted, this was a very ambitious story idea now, especially looking back on it. I'm like, you know, I had zero real time experience. I was just out of college at that point, and I wasn't, you know, published in any professional places by any means. And so I'm just extremely grateful that I was given the opportunity by you to do this story and to run with it. More importantly, I mean, I got to talk to just amazing people for that story. I mean, Steve Garvey was one of the guys, you know, he was in the actual feature itself on ESPN. And then I got to interview him. Jill Painter Lopez, she was really great to me, just my entire internship with the Dodgers, but I got to talk to her for that. I still follow Claire Smith on Twitter, and it's just amazing that I got to talk to her during all of that. It was just an incredible opportunity, and it kind of reaffirmed my love for the editorial side of things. At that point, I had kind of been getting more experience in PR and kind of fallen more into that, but that kind of reignited my passion for writing in this industry and really set me on a trajectory to where I got to now. So,
well,
thank you.
Again. You're a dual threat all over the place. You're a triple threat with it, with everything, with all the work you do on the social side. I mean, it's just, it actually gets me a little kind of like it's the dad in me that gets me a little, oh, wow. That's to think that this kind of reignited editorial for you and where you are right now. Oh, you know, I'm beaming like crazy. So, thank you for making me feel that way. It's one of those things, like, as becoming a parent, I always tell my kids, it's like, you know, the greatest thing you could do is to make your parents proud. And so it's just awesome. Awesome. But, you know, and you also told me, you know, in us getting reconnected, you know, you divulged that even though we got started in baseball, football was your passion, your sporting passion. I think it's a great story how that's started. Let us know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love baseball. Don't get me wrong. I grew up in Chicago. We had two baseball teams, you know, to choose from. So that was always very present in my life. But when I was really little, my dad is from Philadelphia, and he's part of a diehard family of sports. Just like, I feel like Mexican families, it's a big Italian family that, you know, they just, anything they do, they just do 100%, right?
Passion is beaming.
screaming. And it's just, so I remember, I have these very vivid memories of being in these, in my uncle's living room with, surrounded by my cousins, my uncles, everyone watching Eagles games out in Philadelphia. And just the amount of swear words I heard in that, I still not heard combinations of swear words that I had in that living room at like 9 years old. I haven't heard that to this day. So just like the passion that it evoked and just how riled up these guys were getting. And then to start to kind of key in on the game itself as I got a little bit older and realize what a chess match it was, and it being just this ultimate team game that, you know, I feel like any other sport, you know, you can have a star player that really changes the face of, you know, the franchise, of the team. You know, winning and losing can fall on one person. And in football, you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? So just between the team aspect of it and the chess match that I was seeing going back and forth, I was just fascinated by it completely. And I remember very vividly asking my dad at one point, my little nine-year-old brain finally started to realize there were people outside of the players and coaches that were on the field and all this other stuff. And I was like, who are those people? And my dad started to explain to me that you could do other things for an organization. And by that point, I had been writing my little, you know, Sparkle the Mermaid stories, you know, from a very early age. I started writing just silly stories, but my dad kind of put two and two together for me and was like, you can write your stories about your favorite football team. And I was like, really? So that just kind of progressed me into getting, you know, really more involved in the game and studying the game itself. And the more I studied it, the more I just fell in love with it.
Oh, and it definitely comes through in all your work. It's awesome to hear you break down Ronald Jones' 98-yard run. Was just it was music. It was music. But let's talk about these 2020 Bucks. You know, there's Super Bowl chatter. They're 7-3. I think that Monday Night Football game coming up against the Rams is just going to be off the hook. We'll talk about that in a bit, but. You know, is it overly simplistic to say that this is all because of Tom Brady coming over?
I mean, I have to think so. But also, I don't want Tom Brady's impact to be understated either, mm-hmm. because I believe that he was more of like what put the Bucks over the edge. But if you had been paying attention to the Bucks the last few years, which not many people were, they had quietly kind of been putting together a very solid team on both sides of the ball. And then getting Bruce Arians in 2019 last year, him bringing in Todd Bowles as defensive coordinator. I mean, you just had these coaches that came with this massive track record, and it was amazing to have them all assembled on one staff. And so then, you know, you get these guys used to the system and all that kind of stuff. I think these guys were ready for a breakout, but they just needed something extra. And I don't know what better piece you could add to the puzzle than Tom Brady's, though I think that he was definitely the one to set this over the edge. But, you know, he's still getting used to a new system too. So it's not like he's coming in and everyone's, you know, he's telling everyone what to do and all this other stuff. I mean, he's meshing in with Byron Leftwich, who's our offensive coordinator, with Bruce Arians. And he also has the support now of a defense on the other side of the ball. You know, that's so, so good. I think when you look at Tom Brady's early years, especially when he was getting used to the Patriots, he had the benefit of having a really good defense on the other side of the ball to support him. And I think that he recognized that situation here in Tampa. Because after all, I mean, he chose Tampa. He had places, other places that he could go. And I think that he recognized what a complete team the Bucks had and how well that could set him up. So.
That was great. I remember hearing Bruce Arians talk about how he felt like Tom was pitching himself to, you know, Tampa. And I was just, and even Arians was like, you know who you are, right?
Yeah, you don't have to pitch us on you at all. Like, we're sold.
But come, you know, here. you talked about the game, you know, the team game, and you know, last year the Bucks were a team that you could not run against them. I think they were number one against the run, but yeah. You know, passing was definitely a different story. I mean, there were a lot of shootouts with Jameis Winston, and I think also there was so much talk about, you know, protecting Tom and improving the line, and you've been the president of the Tristan Wirfs Marching and Chowder Society. How have those improvements become, you know, kind of like taking the team to the next level?
Yeah, I mean, I am a big proponent of big boy love, big boy joy, big boy love. I love the offensive line, the defensive line, even, I mean, those guys in the trenches just don't get enough love ever. And so I'm so thankful that there's some other people that are kind of starting to wise up now, because I mean, this offensive line is put on a, in a spotlight because they're protecting the greatest, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. So of course people are going to start now paying attention to them. And Tristan has been one that has benefited from that greatly, as has Ali Marpet, who's our left guard. And even our center, Ryan Jensen, like they do so much, and they've gotten so much, they just gelled. And Tristan being a rookie coming in there, he's the one that kind of fortified that line. He was the last piece of the puzzle to that unit, which has to work together so well. And they, I mean, wasted no time in gaining that chemistry that they have. And they've kept Brady pretty clean all year. So they're top 10 as far as sacks allowed this year. They've had a couple of things, but I think that the way that these games have gone kind of is very dependent on how the offensive line plays. And we've been lucky that they have taken that next step forward this year. And as far as the defense goes, especially the secondary, I mean, three of the Bucs starting secondary players last year were rookies.
Yeah.
None of these guys this year even are over the age of 25. So these guys are super, super young. So when they came in last year, I mean, there's kind of a deer in the headlights type situation where you're having to go against the best receivers in the NFL. Not only like, I mean, that's a huge jump from college. And not to mention, I mean, Bowles' system is very creative. It's, and it was kind of even, I feel like, dumbed down last year just to get these guys on the foundation or build the foundation up a little bit, but it's still complicated and they need to kind of thoroughly understand it before they can really start thriving in it. And I think so that's the difference between last year and this year, is these guys are way more comfortable in the system. And they have that experience going against these guys, and they have that confidence because they have been able to shut that guys down, especially at the latter half of last year. So far this year, I mean, Carlton Davis, who's only a third-year corner, has shut down some of the best receivers in the league so far, between Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, a lot of these guys. So we'll see what he ends up doing against the Rams this week. But that's definitely been the difference, and it can't be understated how much that's played a role in how well this team is doing.
Yeah, Carlton Davis is definitely someone from a fantasy standpoint that I've been telling people, okay, if he's going to shadow your receiver, move to somebody else or lower your expectations. So, but you know, I did want to throw out a couple of fantasy questions. You know, it's been hard to kind of get a grip or get any kind of forecast for the backfield, Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette. You know, on a week to week basis, it seemed like, you know, when they were both back there, it just didn't seem like you could figure out which one would be getting the start. So you, as an insider, you see the game from a different level than people. When you're approaching a game, can you kind of get an idea if this is going to be a game where Ronald Jones gets a lot of play or Leonard Fournette? Can you take us behind the curtain a little?
Well, it's difficult, and there really is no tell necessarily, because this offensive staff has kind of proven that they just go with who has the hot hand. And that can change week to week, that can change in the game. We have seen Ronald Jones get start pretty much every week. And I do think that Ronald Jones is just more of a pure runner. That's what he was known for at USC out there in LA. He's just like that downhill. He can identify his gaps. He's got the speed to get down the field, as we saw in his 98 yard touchdown.
Oh yeah.
Last week. So he's just one of those more pure runners, and he's still developing, I think, in the pass catching lane. So when I look at matchups, I look at the team that's coming in, and I'm like, okay, how stout are they against the run? Can you run on these guys? If maybe you can, or there's some wiggle room there, like there was against Carolina, I think that's when you see Ronald Jones have these really big days. And if you have to rely on using your running backs in the passing game to get them the ball, or, you know, utilizing that screen game a little bit more, that's where I think then, you know, Leonard Fournette comes more into play, just because, I mean, this is a guy that had 76 catches for the Jaguars last year, which is an insane amount. Mm-hmm. Even for a receiver, much less a running back. So he's now been used to, you know, he wasn't traditionally used like that in college at LSU, but he has since adapted to that in this league. So I think that it's just depending on the opponent, and seeing what you can do against these opponents. And again, that can change in game, that can change, you know, week to week. But I mean, it'd be hard to argue that Ronald Jones doesn't have the hot hand right now. But, oh, yeah. I mean, LA's defense is very good against the run. So, especially led up front by
Aaron
Donald. I know that he gets some like some flack for his run support and all that other stuff, but I'm like, you know, he's an immovable object at this point. So and was, you know, coupled with everything else that those guys have on that line, I don't know. We'll see. I hate giving fantasy advice. I've told this to you before. I don't want you to like come after me if I'm wrong. Like that. Maybe Leonard Fournette will get a little bit more catches or touches this game because, you know, they have to utilize the pass game. I don't know. We'll see. But that's just me speaking from what I've noticed throughout this season.
I mean, and one of the things about, and please remember, nobody's coming at you except through me. So don't worry about that. I think the one thing about that I keep telling people about fantasy, it's just the probability of opportunity. So mm-hmm. What are the chances that you're going to get a lot of opportunities? And, you know, last week, I know it was, you know, a lot of people when Jones fumbled that there was a lot of, oh my God, he's going to be out of the game very soon. And he didn't.
Right.
And yeah. So I think that was a great step for him. Let's talk about those receivers, you know, and, you know, you got that crew of receivers and, you know, last week was a great script for them to get all involved. You had Evans getting 11 targets, Godwin with 6, Antonio Brown with 8. Is this something that in the right matchup, really all three could be getting, you know, that many opportunities or maybe even more?
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's probably not good news for fantasy owners because you don't necessarily, you're not going to get a ton of stats out of like an individual player. And if you do, it's anybody's guess as to who it is. I think the team loves that though, because that makes it very difficult for opposing defenses to try and game plan against these guys. Because I mean, like, what are you going to like? I think teams really wised up earlier in the season. They had been doubling Mike Evans pretty much the first 4 or 5 games of the season. They quickly realized that the Bucs had other effective targets. Even when Chris Godwin was down, you know, you had Scotty Miller step up, you had the rookie Tyler Johnson step up. Now the team has Antonio Brown. So it's like doubling one player just isn't an option anymore. And you're going to have to rely on your corners to go one-on-one with these guys. And Brady, I mean, he's done it his entire career. He can spread the ball out to whoever is open, whatever skill position that is. And he happens to have a ton of receivers to choose from. So if one guy isn't open, he's going to go to another. And that's kind of, it's just going to be this balancing act, depending on what the opponents do against them. And again, it makes it them very, very hard to game plan for. And it makes it really hard on fantasy owners. So I'm sorry.
You know what? It's one of those things. I mean, like I had Antonio Brown and Chris Godwin on one of my teams and I started both of them and they both helped me because they both got plenty of opportunity. It's not like I keep telling people, it's not like a running back where, you know, where if Jones has a big game, Fournette's not going to have a big game, but you can have multiple receivers or even all three of them, you know, were viable last week, which I think is great. And I think the thing a lot of people were kind of saying that Tom Brady, you know, I heard in the offseason his arm is diminished and this and that. And I was just like, I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing that guy's arm is diminished in any way, shape or form. And I kept telling people, it's like, he's going to benefit from the fact that in November and December, he's not playing in 30 degrees and lower. He's going to be and I think we're seeing that bear out a little bit, but look, you know, let's talk about, and, you know, talking about him, I thought it was really cool. You know, we talked offline, the Tommy and Gronky. that's so cool. That's so cool. I mean, I know your department put that together. I mean, just how fun is it to see them in that kind of light?
Yeah, I mean, I personally didn't really have much to do with it at all, but it was my department. So any chance I get to brag on the people that I work with, I try to do that because that was their brainchild and credit to them. You know, they went to. So, you know, Tom and Gronk both have their people, right? And so you kind of approach their people first with these ideas, and then they're the ones that are kind of like selling it to these guys. This concept needed no selling at all between Tom and Rob both. And I think we were a little bit nervous to see how Tom would open up because we haven't traditionally seen that from him when he was a member of the Patriots. You didn't really see a lot of personality come out of him, especially with him and Rob. So he just took it though and absolutely ran with it. He loves it. They both loved the whole segment. Anytime we're, you know, releasing a new episode, Tom's people are like, when can we post it? Like, they're so eager to put it out there, and they're having so much fun with it. And I think that that's another thing too. I mean, as Tom Brady, you know, he is getting older, but he's having all these new experiences. And I think that that helps kind of refresh someone or rejuvenate them in a lot of ways, because they're having all these new experiences, whether it's on the field, off the field, whether, you know, doing fun little content or whatever it is. But, you know, he's definitely, they're benefiting, I think, both of them from not having to deal with those harsh winters too. Like, their bodies are just not as broken down yet.
You've lived through Chicago winters, so you know the difference.
I know how bad they get.
Oh, well, let's talk about Monday Night Football. You know, it's, I think this is a game with two of the top five defenses, maybe even top three defenses in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. both defenses and both teams, they stop the run, they stop the pass. I mean, this could be some old style football. Let's talk about when the Bucs have the ball. You're going up against that manimal, Aaron Donald up front. And then you got Jalen Ramsey, who on national TV basically shut down DK Metcalf, who's a very similar type of receiver to Mike Evans in size and speed. What how do you see the Bucs kind of attacking them that way?
Well, I mean, I think that the secondary has been the difference with this Rams defense this year. You know, that was how they fortified it with Jalen Ramsey, and they're doing well in the secondary level. They're obviously doing well up front. I do think that maybe there's an opportunity there in those intermediate routes, you know, that intermediate level of the field to kind of attack this defense, just because if you can get behind Aaron Donald, but in front of Jalen Ramsey and kind of dink and dunk your way through that, which Tom has been able to do, obviously, you know, throughout his career, maybe you'd have an opportunity there. But again, I don't want to discount those linebackers either. So I think that a lot of this is going to depend on how much they can run the ball, if they can. I know, you know, Los Angeles has the fifth ranked rushing defense. They have the second ranked overall defense. So that's going to be a challenge. But I think that when you know that you're good and someone is able to do something on you that nobody else traditionally has, you know, that can open things up and really kind of mess with you. So I think if you can get the running game involved as much as possible, we'll see. But I don't know that the Rams are going to give that up. Maybe the trip across the country, you know, they have to travel. So.
Yep. And this is like their fifth time traveling west to east. So.
Oh, that sounds like us last year.
I think
last year we had ridiculous travel schedule.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's go to the other side of the ball. You know, the Rams have that three-headed running back committee, and they do basically set everything up off the run with a lot of, you know, with definitely establishing the run, establishing the play action. And then you've got those wideouts, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, who are the ones who have really, you know, gotten pro the Pro Bowls, but Josh Reynolds is kind of coming up. How do you see the Bucs, having to defend them there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, running the ball is the key on their side of the ball too, because it's the same thing. The Bucs bread and butter is stopping the run and making teams one dimensional as a result. And I think that with Los Angeles's propensity to try and establish the run early, if they're not able to do that, that does not open up their offense to doing much more than Goff just having to throw the ball. I mean, you really can't rely on play action, which I know Jared Goff is a huge, and Sean McVay, you know, he's really good at deploying that. He's really good at the motions, trying to test these guys' eyes, the pre-snap motions rather. So it's going to just take the Bucs being very disciplined and just sticking to their game. I mean, we saw it even last year with this matchup between the two teams in the LA Coliseum, where the Bucs, you know, shut the Rams down on the ground and forced Jared Goff to win that game for them, and he couldn't end up doing it. He did score 40 points, though, so, like, I don't want to completely discount him there. But I do think that this year both defenses are just so stout, and that's what it's going to come down to. We might see this kind of smash-mouth defensive football game, you know, on Monday night, but we'll see. I really think that it's just going to take for the Bucs just being disciplined and sticking to their game and doing what they do, because and now they have a lot more support, I feel like, in the secondary too, where those guys are, you know, they're up to the task of taking on both Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods.
Oh, I think it's going to be a fun game. I think it's really going to be a fun game. I love that it's going to be the national, Monday Night Football on a national spotlight. So it's going to be awesome. Well, I got one last question,
Okay.
and it's a little bit unrelated, but still related to the history of the Bucks. I came of age as a football fan in 1977, and growing up in LA, the Rams were my team. But I will say, I loved the Bucks helmet. What are the chances that we get to see those creamsicle colors with that vintage helmet on throwback days? That doesn't have to be, I'm not asking for a complete comeback, but just the, once or twice a season, hopefully on a Monday or Sunday night game.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge supporter of that. I mean, we did just go back to kind of the Super Bowl era uniforms in general this year, but as of right now, the NFL only allows you one helmet. Now, the rumor is that that's changing next year and you are going to be able to incorporate another helmet. And if that's the case, then I hope that the Bucks, kind of pay homage to that era. And it's a fun, throwback. I mean, we've also seen like all these crazy throwbacks across the league. I mean, I grew up a Bears fan and like some of their stuff has been ridiculous. The Green Bay Packers, like tan and navy, like whatever those throwbacks, I'm like, okay, listen, if these guys can throw those, can field those, if the Pittsburgh Steelers can throw out a Bumblebee jersey, like we should be able to throw out some of the best throwbacks that you will ever see. And it was the whole character is just so perfect because it's Bucko Bruce, and then we hire a head coach named Bruce Arians. I mean, it was just so perfect and meant to be. And I feel like we need to kind of lean into that a little bit more. So hopefully next year when they change up the helmet rules, that'll be possible.
Oh man. Well, Carmen, this has been a blast. I can't tell you. I mean, you're going to be invited more and more times. I hope you don't mind,
Not at
as the
all.
off season. And, but, yeah, please let us know. Where can we find your work?
All of my work is on buccaneers.com. If you want to follow me and follow my thought process on Twitter, go for it. I'm CarmeV on both Twitter and Instagram. So that's always a fun little outlet for me to be social and interact with people in that way. So yeah, check it out.
Like I said, you're a triple threat. You're, writing, talking, both on video and on audio, and now and the social media. I was not understating it when I said you're a rock star, and it's just
Oh.
many good things ahead of you. For me, Familia, you can find me Jorge Martin 17 at Familia FFB on Twitter, and don't forget FamiliaFFB.com for original content and our Familia FFB Facebook page. Carmen, again, please. Gracias, gracias, gracias. And to our audience, gracias to you for listening. Happy early Thanksgiving. This is going to be great. Get ready for a great Monday Night Football. And remember, everybody, todos somos familia.